From WUWM Milwaukee Public Radio, this is Lake Effect. I'm Mitch Tyke. Today on the program, the Senate spent Thursday debating the biennial state budget. We'll get perspective from the Journal Sentinel's Jason Stein. Then men's health is in the city spotlight. Pianist Shaeen Wong plays this weekend with a fine arts quartet.
Everything comes out on the stage. Everything comes out when you perform, I think. Agreements or disagreements or arguments, but definitely it comes out in the performance.
Then get out your tent this weekend and pitch it in the backyard.
This is kind of for first-time campers, and it's a nice transition. You know, you've got the comforts of home, you're right there, you can even leave the back porch light on if you want, you know, but it's really about that first experience in nature, you know.
Lake Effect is next, after the news. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for being with us today. After hours of debate following weeks of debate, the Wisconsin State Senate yesterday passed a proposed biennial budget for the state of Wisconsin. The bill, which passed the Assembly earlier in the week, now goes to Governor Scott Walker's desk. Walker praised the work on the budget by the legislature, but could still use his line item veto power to alter it. The bill includes provisions for a sweeping expansion of the state's private school voucher program, as well as cuts to the state's income tax, among other major changes. It passed by a single vote. Jason Stein covers state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. He joins us from the Capitol Bureau, which is currently being pelted by a severe thunderstorm. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Mitch. Good to be here.
Were there any major surprises in the day-long debate yesterday?
I think there are always surprises. I think, you know, a couple of things that we're trying to work out that you could call surprises or just things that need further details are the effects of some of the voucher proposals. There's one proposal that would set some limits on the release of public records related to voucher schools. And there's some question about to what extent that would limit those, if it would simply be a matter of timing or if it could be something more than that. And then there's also a question about whether or not a statewide expansion of taxpayer-funded private voucher schools could be broader than it has been presented, to put it in the simplest terms.
Well, and how are those questions likely to work themselves out?
Typically what happens is that the legislature's, you know, nonpartisan attorneys put out memos. That's a big key to this. You know, you get more people that are involved in the process of putting together an amendment, talking about what they were intending to do. You know, the way things are generally worked out in society is, you know, through a dialogue of lots of different people. One thing that makes this, you know, a little different than the way a typical bill would work in the legislature is we did have some changes come in very late in the process on Tuesday and Wednesday in the Assembly. So, you know, it's just going to take a little time to work those things out, which, and I can add that that's not unusual for a budget. It's just not the way a typical bill works.
We've heard about them over the past weeks, but briefly, aside from the expansion of the voucher program to statewide, what are the other most significant items as you see them in the budget headed to the governor's desk?
Sure. You can probably, perhaps you heard the lightning in the background. There's a very close lightning strike here in Madison, big thunderstorm. You know, the way that things are going to work just going forward, and then we'll get back to your question, is, you know, the governor is going to have a few days here till June 30th to do his partial veto powers, which are, you know, the most powerful in the country or close to that. And so, you know, there could still be very significant changes in the impact of the bill in this budget. Well, it cuts income taxes by $650 million over 2 years, and property taxes will go up by about 1% for the typical homeowner under the budget. Again, you have these voucher provisions You have a number of provisions that affect the policies, everything from which places police and firefighters around the state can live to whether or not a nonprofit journalism center will remain in the UW-Madison campus.
The Senate passed it by a single vote. As we know by now, Dale Schultz was the Republican that crossed party lines and voted with Democrats against the budget. There were some other Republican senators who had concerns about specific items. It seems that that would have put them in an excellent position to have gotten what they wanted. Was it just that their objections were not strong enough to derail the whole package?
Well, I mean, there were certainly some changes made to the budget in the final week. And, you know, some of those certainly, I think many of those changes were sought by various senators, including Senator Rob Coles, the Republican from Green Bay, who were needed those to get on the budget to vote yes. You know, I think the reality, though, is even though a single senator can hold up the budget, you know, given that it was a 17-16 vote, that's also sort of a perilous undertaking because, you know, Dale Schultz last session voted against a couple key Republican measures, including Scott Walker's union legislation, and now he faces a very serious primary challenge from a Republican assemblyman who lives in his district. So voting no on the budget is you know, a possibility, but, you know, carries political risks for lawmakers.
What does Dale Schultz still get from carrying the Republican label at this point, as opposed to switching parties or becoming an independent?
Well, he's somebody that's been in the legislature for decades as a Republican. You know, his politics and values are maybe not in keeping with the party, but, you know, the party has had a number of, you know, the party of Mitt Romney has also been historically the party of Theodore Roosevelt and people like that. So, you know, I think he maybe identifies a little more with that strain of Republicanism. And, you know, he said that he's been a Republican all his life and doesn't want to change. Now, as you say, as he gets closer and closer to the possibility of a hard primary, he may, you know, start to rethink that. You know, he could be very formidable as an independent in his district, but obviously he has other options as well. He's certainly at an age and length of service where he could simply retire too. He's by no means guaranteed that he's going to run for re-election, so we'll have to wait and see.
Jason Stein, thanks so much.
Thank you, Mitch.
Stay dry. Jason Stein covers state politics from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Capitol Bureau in Madison. He's also co-author with Patrick Marley of the book More Than They Bargained For, Scott Walker, Unions, and the Fight for Wisconsin. He joined us by phone from Madison. We'll take a break now, but when we come back, what the health system needs from men and what men need from the health system. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. I'm going to make an admission here. There was a period in my life when I just didn't make the time to go to the doctor. It was a short period, probably just about 10 years worth. Fortunately for my health, doctor's visits are a more routine part of my life. But men, by and large, are not as vigilant about getting their health concerns checked as women. Earlier this year, we reported on the launch of a Milwaukee-based web portal aimed at African-American men's health called Brain, Brawn, and Body. The local effort continues during June, which is designated as Men's Health Month. It's an issue getting attention from Milwaukee's Health Commissioner Bevin Baker, along with 7th District Alderman Willie Wade. They join us now, along with Brain, Brawn, and Body co-founder Eric Vaughn. Nice to see all of you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you. Glad to be
here. Thank you very much.
Let me ask you this, Bevin Baker, and then I'll be curious to hear the other two of you weigh in on this question. What do you see as the primary issue getting in the way of men taking a more active approach to their health? What's keeping us having this conversation today?
I believe that, unfortunately, we've been conditioned as boys to tough it out, and it's been seen as historically as a sign of weakness to say something hurts or to seek care. So in being strong and being committed to being strong, we've taught young boys and adolescents to not seek care. So this is something we have to overcome. It's not a sign of weakness to seek help for mental, physical, or emotional care.
Eric Vaughn and Willie Wade, neither of you are employed in the public health field per se, but does this square with your experience?
I think so. I mean, I think it is the genesis for what we created with Brain, Brawn, and Body, understanding that men have been reluctant to engage fully in their own care and needing to have the help of family members, particularly the women in their lives, to help them do that. You understand very quickly that there is this desire, I think, on the part of men, but there are all of these things that get in the way. And much of what we kind of assign to men is stereotypical. I mean, as I've gone deeper into this and talked to more and more men, men do go to the doctor. We don't like to go, but I don't know that women like to go to the doctor. I think it is something that we all have to kind of reckon with at a certain age. But as Commissioner Baker pointed out, we're conditioned from early on not to let it be known that we're ill, that we hurt. Women, on the other hand, they start going to the doctor at a very early age, and it continues right through adulthood. So we're trying to get the trends shifted toward men so that we begin to do the same things that women do regarding health.
And I'd like to just add to that, that part of it is denial, you know, and that's from the way we've been taught as boys. And the maintenance on health is something that we want to deny. You know, we really think that with a little rest and a rub something on it that our body is just capable of healing itself. And in most cases, that is true. But sometimes you get indicators that let you know that it's something a little more serious and we're in denial of it. The other part of it is just the stubbornness of men. I wouldn't admit this in front of my wife, but, you know, sometimes guys, you know, we don't want to admit we lost.
Will, you just admitted
it in front
of your wife.
Hopefully she's not listening.
And then the other part is some of it is part financial. Medical and health care is very expensive. And if you're not part of a workforce or organization that has some type of benefits that's affordable, a lot of times, even if you want to go, and that's not always the case because some people have great health benefits and still are stubborn. But sometimes it's financial and sometimes people avoid it because they really can't afford to go.
Bevin Baker, is that part of the conversation we don't always have when it comes to men's health, especially in a place like Milwaukee where there is not an enormous affluent community?
Certainly, there are many indicators of poverty and economic imbalance. And I think that joblessness and the ability of men to enter and maintain in the workforce affects us all. Those determinants affect our health. And I think it's something that we have to be aware of. We have to understand that your mental and your physical and your emotional and your spiritual health are impacted by whether or not you can participate in society and be gainfully employed. It affects us all. Job loss is up there with loss of an individual in your family, spouse, and those types of things emotionally, that original thing. So it affects our health. So we need to make certain that we deal with the economic health of our community, and that will affect men's health as well.
Two of the three of you have positions related to government. How much can government do to help or even make men change their attitudes towards their own health?
Well, I think the first thing is that we can champion the notion of healthcare access. And it doesn't matter whether you are left or right or center and what your political stance is. The Affordable Care Act is doing just that. It's opening doors for those typically who haven't had coverage, and it may accrue access to them. So we've got to advocate that you can get in for preventive and primary care, and then we need to make certain that we outreach to men. And that's what we're here about today, telling them you need to do it and then showing them mechanisms to actually follow through.
Do you think saying Alderman Willie Wade says you should get your blood sugar checked carries a lot of weight? How do you see yourself in this equation of helping get that message across?
I'm hoping that's the case. I mean, you know, you don't want to read your own press clippings or get the big head, but I do in some ways have a profile. In the city of Milwaukee, the elected officials, especially the African-American ones, they have a higher profile than some other people. I mean, that may not be the case in Chicago or New York, but in Milwaukee, definitely it is. So I'm trying to use my profile as an elected official to get involved in men's health issues. That's why we did the press conference about Men's Health Month. I got an event that's coming up dealing with Men's Health Month that's dealing with men's health, and I'm getting involved personally. And I also want to try to be healthy myself. I try to work out, try to keep my weight at a certain level, keep myself looking healthy. So when people see me, they say, well, you know what? You know, he looks like he's taking care of himself. So it's some role model stuff that you want in there, too. So I'm trying to do what I can.
Well, you know, Mitch, and I'm not that government type, but I want to tip my hat to Alderman Wade, Commissioner Baker, and Mayor Barrett, because as Alderman Wade said, last week we held a press conference acknowledging Men's Health Month. And I think when you ask what can government do, the fact that these figures who represent city government saw it important, saw it significant for the city to say, this is the day, this is the week, this is the month that men should become aware of the health concerns that we all share that impact this entire community, it speaks volumes. I'll tell you a quick story. I was on my way here just now, and I'm crossing Water Street, and I ran into a young man. He's 36 years old, and I think simply because we've created this website, and for whatever reason, that is how people associate with me now, he stops me. He says, Eric, I just went to the doctor, and my blood pressure is 120 over 80. The doctor told me not to worry. And I said, well, that's not anything to worry about. That sounds like a pretty – I'm not a doctor, but that sounds like a pretty good number to me. You know, there may be a few things you can do. But the point is that the website has raised his awareness and has made him conscious of the fact that he does have a blood pressure and that there are numbers that are relevant to him or should be, and he's trying to achieve those numbers. So I think you couple the website with the efforts of the city to, again, acknowledge Men's Health Month, Men's Health Week. I think that if we can carry this on month after month after month in terms of the awareness and alerts that we're putting out, I think we will impact and improve the health of men in this community.
Bevin Baker, where do you think the conversation ought to start for men? What are the kinds of health issues that ought to be on people's radar screens first?
Well, I think it's just like what Eric said. We need to treat this as we do in sports. You really need to know your scores. There are certain things that you need to be educated about. You know, with the NBA finals are going on, everyone knows every stat. But there's some stats you need to know. You need to know about blood pressure. You need to know about your blood sugar. You need to know about your cholesterol levels. Know your scores. Let's just get the five things that men should know. And then the most important thing is to talk to other men about making certain that they know these things. Get your prostate exam. Get your colonoscopy if you're at risk or you're old enough to do that. Know your scores. I think we start where men are. We need to go to barbershops. We need to go to gyms. We need to go to churches. Find out where they are. And let's keep this simple. Let's not over-exaggerate what's at play here. We're men. We do things differently than women. Let's start and know your scores.
All four of us are men.
Real men.
is there a cultural aspect to this also? Is there a mm-hmm. way of getting at African-American men in one way and maybe Latino men in another way and white men in another way? I mean, are there certain aspects to this that are sociocultural, if you will?
You know what? I think I'll take that because I think it is. I think it's a learned behavior and it's something that's modeled and it's something that parents should do. For instance, I have an 11-year-old son and a 15-year-old daughter, and we don't have soda in the house. We drink a lot of water. We have a workout room in our house. I'm constantly on their case about what they eat, when they eat it, about sweets, about chips. And then, once again, I have to model it. My wife and myself, we make sure we don't have any unnecessary things. We have a lot of produce in the house. Those type of things we do all the time to try to make health just be a part of your life as you go on. So then once you get older, you can have that tradition going with your children. So my wife and I do that right now. She works out, I work out, and our kids work out with us because we want that to be part of just what you do. School, work, health, looking out for seniors, trying to help a person when you can, being spiritually based. We want that to be part of the way we live, and I'm trying to incorporate that into my kids because definitely I don't know if my dad ever went to a dentist or a doctor. I didn't see it.
Yeah. And Mitch, the other thing we got to do is there has to be a two parts of this covenant. Men need to do those things in terms of staying healthy, looking at preventive health, but our providers and those who are servicing them need to deal with them when they get there in a culturally sensitive, culturally competent way. And that's part of the problem. The Institute of Medicine says that even when there's equal access for blacks, whites, Hispanics, you know, African-American men still have a disparity in how they are treated when they get there. So we could do all the right things, go to the doctor. And if the doctor or those clinicians who are seeing you don't understand and don't try to meet you where you are culturally, then you're going to have a negative outcome. So you have to manage that. So we have to educate the whole community, not just men to go get healthy, but doctors, nurses, clinicians, and anyone who's going to intercept African-American, Hispanic, Asian, or Caucasian men to be culturally sensitive to them, to listen to that man who's probably for the first time trying to manage his own care.
You know, I think part of what we have to do is, again, in this whole awareness-raising campaign, is keep people abreast, keep men abreast of those things that are available to them. To that end, let me just suggest that people go to brainbrawnbody.com, go to the Healthy Happenings page where you'll find the event that Alderman Wade mentioned.
Yeah, mine is June 21st, yeah. Friday, this Friday.
And you talk about what government can do. The health centers this weekend or on the weekend of the 22nd are going to be doing some programming. The Isaac Coggs Center is going to be doing a huge health fair.
And we'll be at Juneteenth as well.
So there are a lot of activities going on around health this month. And as I said, it's important that we keep these things going, not just one month out of the year, but every month, and keep it top of mind for those men in this community who really need to have the information.
Eric Vaughn, Bevin Baker, Willie Wade, thank you all so much and best of luck.
All right, thank you.
Bevin Baker is health commissioner for the city of Milwaukee. Willie Wade is alderman from Milwaukee's 7th District. And Eric Vaughn is co-founder of the website Brain, Brawn, and Body. There is a link to more information on events today and tomorrow about men's health from WUWM.com/lake effect. A break now, and when we return, pianist Shaheen Wong talks with us ahead of a concert Sunday with Milwaukee's Fine Arts Quartet. This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. More of Lake Effect now. I'm Mitch Tyke. Milwaukee's Fine Arts Quartet has been in residence at UW-Milwaukee for a half century, the same length the college's Peck School of the Arts has been around. A more recent tradition for the quartet is its Summer Evenings of Music, typically a series of four concerts through the month of June. Among the hallmarks of the series is the inclusion of guest performers and a move away from standard quartet repertoire. Sunday, guest pianist Shaheen Wong will join the Fine Arts Quartet for a concert that includes Chopin's Piano Concerto No. 1 in a chamber ensemble arrangement. Wong is a native of China and for the last 15 years has carved out an impressive set of credits and recordings. She tells Lake Effect's Bonnie North about her previous performances in Milwaukee.
Whenever I'm in New Milwaukee, I always perform with Fine Arts. And we did, I believe, 2 years ago, we did some Schumann chamber music and also Franck chamber music. And for last year, I think we did some duos with violins and I forgot exactly what we play, but it's always just interesting repertoire there.
Yes, and for you, you're primarily a soloist, aren't you?
Right. I mean, I do everything. I play with orchestra, do recitals, and play with chamber musicians, and I love doing all of the different categories, for sure.
Will this be the first time you do the Chopin with the Fine Arts Quartet?
Yes, this will be first time doing Chopin.
Oh, that'll be...
With the chamber.
That'll be exciting.
Yes, I have actually never done anything like this, a concerto with a chamber group. It should be interesting.
How would you approach that? How do you approach that as a pianist, it being so different from what you might have done before?
This is actually, when you think about an orchestra, there's concerto, the soloist, and there's conductor, and there's the orchestra members. So that is how the conductor is making sure that we stay together. But now in the chamber music, it is just the five musicians that we're making sure that we're doing everything correctly. We're making music and we are doing the ensemble right. So it's sort of we're our own conductors. This way, it's more intimate and probably has a little more freedom to do things, I would say, because it's less people involved with a concerto like this. And especially with Chopin, he's the king of the rubatos and everything. And improvisation-like passages. So it will be probably a luxury of having lots of freedom to do things that I want to do.
When you sit down and work with a group like the Fine Arts Quartet, who have, at least some of the members, been together for many, many, many years and have developed that, I want to say it's a sixth sense that musicians have when they've played together a long time.
Of course.
And yes, you've played with them, but not on a regular basis. How do you find your way into working with that cohesive group that they already are?
It's very interesting because it is just like, I would say, compared to daily life, you meet people and then you click right away. Sometimes you just have these moments that you feel that that you have connection with someone or you have a very easy way of clicking with each other. That's what I felt the first time I played with Fine Arts, and we share a lot of, I think, common sense in music making and of doing phrasing. Also, musicality, we have a lot of similarities. That's what made it a lot easier to combine the five of us quickly and then to get a repertoire done. But also, it's not every time like that, I know. It's sometimes you just maybe not so smooth, but then through working through it, you always get where you want it. But I think the Fine Arts and I, we clicked right away in the beginning, so it was a really big plus sign there.
Isn't it interesting how that works? And as an audience member, I love it because I can always tell when the performers have that level of comfort with each other.
Absolutely.
And trust.
Right. Everything comes out on the stage. Everything comes out when you perform, I think. Agreements or disagreements or arguments, but definitely it comes out in the performance that represents each individual's personality, I think. It's okay. It's totally fine sometimes if there are disagreements, but that's what makes it interesting, is that you can work it through and then come out with something that's actually even better result than not talking about it. So it's definitely, it's a positive thing to collaborate with different musicians. And I have played with many different musicians without playing with them on a daily basis. And that's how you just work it out. And then plus the natural feeling together, you can like the same food, you can talk about things and get to know each other. This all helps very much.
I was listening to you and thinking, finding your way into a piece of music and finding what the composer wanted to express through that piece of music, but then also figuring out what the five of you want to express as well. Mm-hmm. Are they sometimes different things? I mean, I know you're in service to the composer to a great extent, but do you ever find yourself wanting to go somewhere that isn't maybe a traditional?
Oh, absolutely. Yes, always there are. I mean, there are different. And actually, when you play the same piece a few times, but you never play the same way already, it's natural like that. And definitely exploring interesting ideas and something that people have never done. Of course, it's going to be within the boundaries of what tensions of the composer. We're not going to make Mozart into Schoenberg or something like that, but definitely explore more interesting, rarely done ideas, or just make something that's even more beautiful or something already done before, or just make it our own way. Nothing will come out the same. Different musicians placing piece, it's always different with different groups, different representations, so it will never be the same.
As you've delved into the Chopin yourself, into your part, are there particular things that you're thinking about that you might like to push in a different direction when you finally get together and rehearse?
Right. I have played this piece when I was younger, and now coming back to it, there are definitely different approach and different understandings. I think I personally just want to see how the first run-through will be with the quartet, and from there, I would probably give some... I definitely think it's an extreme romantic piece, but I personally don't tend to make romantic pieces into a sort of a drag kind of feeling, so that's something that I definitely don't want to. It's still a very simple, beautiful, just melodic line, and it should be just played without any extra decorations. Just the way it is, it's already beautiful.
So don't overdo it, in other words.
Yeah, with everything, I don't want to overdo anything that's not necessary.
Is this particular time period one of your favorites to play, or do you have other repertoire that you're more fond of?
Oh, no, I'm all into every different genres, from Baroque to this romantic, and then I have Impressionism. I love Gershwin also, American music, and contemporary. I have recorded Daniel Poor's both piano preludes. I'm into every genre that has clicked with me, the piece of music that has clicked with me. I just recorded the American CD with Shandos, three American concertos, the Gershwin, the Barber, and the Copland.
Ooh.
On one CD with the Royal Scottish Symphony Orchestra. That was completed last month, and it will be released in October.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to hear that. All three fantastic pieces.
There are really, really magnificent. Thank you very much.
And the Royal Scottish National Orchestra is very good, too.
Yes, yes. Extremely high-quality playing.
Yeah, and nimble. I think of them as a particularly nimble orchestra. I don't know why, but I do.
That's a good word, yes. It makes sense. Yes, I know exactly what you mean. They are, first of all, they're all very good players, and they're very, very self-critical, actually. At the moment when we were recording, they would individually go into the recording studio and listen to their replay. And if there were something that they don't like, they will want to do it again. So they are very self-strict like that.
Now, have you and the Fine Arts Quartet recorded at all?
Yes, we recorded on Schumann Piano Trio, Opus 132, and Piano Quartet and Piano Quintet.
Is there any possibility that you might think about recording the Chopin?
We're going to have to find out if there is any interest from recording labels. Yeah. That is always the first.
Always the first thing, yes.
Yeah.
But I imagine it would be lovely to get that onto a recording.
That's, of course, everything should be recorded.
So other than this concert on Sunday, do you have any other plans to be back here in Milwaukee with the Fine Arts Quartet, or is that it for this year?
I think, yes, so far has been just once a year, and I'm very honored, very, very grateful that I'm being invited so many times already. So I hope that goes on as an annual reunion to play together for the audience there. That would be wonderful.
Well, thank you so much for taking time to talk with us. Welcome back to Milwaukee, and have a wonderful concert.
Thank you very much. I look forward very much. Thank you.
Pianist Chiyin Wong will perform Sunday evening with the Fine Arts Quartet at the Zelazo Center on the campus of UW-Milwaukee. She'll perform music by Chopin, and the concert also includes works by Stravinsky and Ravel. The show helps wrap up the 50th anniversary celebration of the Peck School of the Arts. Chiyin Wong spoke with Bonnie North. Another break now, and then when we return, our outdoor adventure contributors share some compelling reasons to camp out in your backyard this weekend. That's when Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. Lake Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Tyke. One of the things you realize if you spend much of your life in an office or in a school is that you lose touch with the feel and the rhythm of the outdoors. You can easily spend a day inside and have no idea what temperature it is on the other side of your window. It's for reasons such as those that people escape to the campground. But camping can be a daunting prospect for people who haven't done it before, such as children. One small step into the camping frontier comes along tomorrow night, designated as the Great American Backyard Campout. Lake Effect Outdoor Adventure contributors Stacy Tornio and Ken Keffer join us now to make the case for pitching the tent out by the garage. Welcome back to the show.
Thanks.
It's always great to be here.
The Great American Backyard Campout is coming along very soon. What is the Great American Backyard Campout? What are the compelling reasons why we should think about camping someplace besides a traditional campground?
Well, I think the Great American Backyard Campout really just embraces the fact that you can experience nature anywhere. And for a lot of folks, this will be their first time camping out. And so what better place than to step out in your own backyard? If you're a hardcore camper, you're not limited to your backyard. You can go anywhere and explore, you know, and pitch a tent. But really, this is kind of for first-time campers, and it's a nice transition. You know, you've got the comforts of home. You're right there. You can even leave the back porch light on if you want, you know. But it's really about that first experience in nature, you know.
Do the two of you, I should ask this, do you remember when your first camping experiences were? Did you ever camp out in the backyard?
Okay, I have a confession to make that I did a lot of camping growing up, and then I'm like, I hate camping. It's too much. That's all that we did as kids. So I kind of rediscovered it whenever I was older and with my own kids because they're like, we want to camp out. And I'm like, okay, I'll give it a try. So last year we did the Great Backyard Camp Out, and we put the tent like right there beyond our deck, and it was cool. It was a cool thing to experience, like we heard an owl at night hooting, you know, and just the crickets chirping and then the lightning bugs coming out. It was really cool.
Yeah, I for sure remember camping out, you know, in my grandparents' backyard. And you could hear the creek down below, you know. I hear the cows bellowing off in the distance. So, yeah, that takes me right back there.
Going to be interesting if I do this and we hear cows bellowing in the distance in the eastern part of Tulsa.
But yeah, watch out.
Something will have gone wrong. But beyond just the pitching of the tent and the sleeping in the tent outdoors, What would you suggest that people do to make this more of a camping experience?
Well, some people have those little portable campfire units, and you can use those. But even, like, take that away. Use a grill, like s'mores. Like, s'mores are great to cook. And even if you don't have a fire and you can't make a fire, use your grill. Like, cook out on the grill and then use those coals or those like, flames to cook a few things more. Ken has a cool cooking idea too.
Yeah. I mean, the Backyard Campout webpage has a ton of resources and it's got a huge recipe selection. So I was looking at that the other day and I found the recipe I'm going to try this year, and it's for easy orange muffins. And you take an orange, you slice it in half, you scoop out the guts of the orange, you put a muffin mix in there, you wrap it up in foil, and you bake that right there over the coals. And so, you know, fun, something like that you're not going to make in your kitchen. So if you're in your backyard though, or, you know, you're out camping, that's a great recipe and a way to really feel like, you know, this is an experience that you can't have.
What would you is there a list that you think it would make sense to pack for this? I mean, obviously there are things that you aren't going to need to bring along because they are inside. But what would be a good kind of you know, off the top of your head list of things to bring along for a backyard campout?
You know, I think you should really challenge yourself to not to use that inside resource, you know, and be self-sufficient in your backyard. And so, you know, you're going to need some warm blankets or sleeping bags. You know, you can pitch a tent if you have one, or you can sleep out under the stars. That's one of my favorite things. You know, one of the coolest things to bring along is flashlights, and especially for kids. You know, that's kind of a security blanket. They can all make sure every kid has their own flashlight. Take lots of batteries because they're going to be on most of the night, you know, and you can make games out of the flashlights too. But I think that's part of the comfort of being outside. It's dark out there, you know. And if you're going to go beyond your backyard and, you know, into more wilderness areas, that's a great lesson, is to have that flashlight available. And it'll make everyone feel a little more at home and at ease.
It seems like that might be one other lesson, that even though it's called the Great American Backyard Campout, you don't necessarily have to camp out in your backyard. Maybe there is a park or a campground not far from your house.
Correct. Yeah, for sure. You know, and that's a great way, you know, to go to a campground and experience, you know, other families. I know that people can hang out together and share experiences over the campfire. You know, it's a great way to get back in touch with nature, but also, you know, with other folks as well.
And part of it, too, is, you know, if you can't go and camp out on June 22nd, that's okay. Like, if you can, that's kind of cool to be like, I'm camping out with kids across the country on this day. But if you can't, they're encouraging you to pick another day and do that, because it's more about have this experience, you know, get out there, see what's around you, and give your kids a new experience.
And this is spearheaded by the National Wildlife Federation, and I gather they have lots of resources on their website, correct?
Yeah, for sure. Yep. You know, they've got a lot of great stuff. They've got online, you know, packing lists, camping tips, you know, campfire safety things. They've got some great songs and stories, you know, some traditional ones that we probably all sang growing up, but some new ones as well. They've got some craft activities, you know, things to do when you're out there so you don't have to answer that, you know, I'm bored, what am I going to do, you know? So, and my favorite, they had a testimonial, and the quote from one of the participants last year was like, we had such a great time and it happened in our own backyard. You know, I think that's the important lesson, is that folks, you know, forgot that they were right there in their own backyard. Have this moment.
So the one last challenge that I would say is leave the electronics inside. So it's easy to say, oh, you know, I'll just take my iPad out into the tent, but leave those inside just for the day. You know, you can play other games, and not even board games, but, you know, playing I Spy or 20 Questions, like really bring that back and get that, enjoy that with your kids.
And I think you'll also notice when you get out there and start to observe, you know, and pay attention, there's going to be wildlife in your own backyard too. You know, Stacy mentioned hearing owls on their backyard camp out, you know, and right here in Milwaukee. And we've got some information on that webpage too about, you know, mothing. So looking for those moths flying around at night, you know, and maybe you're lucky enough to live in an area that's going to have some bats flying through. So just experience and watch and observe, you know, it'll be great. It's a great time.
Well, we'll see you in the great outdoors. Ken, Stacy, thanks so much.
Yeah, thanks.
Indeed.
Lake Effect contributor Stacy Tornio and Ken Keffer are the authors of the Kids Outdoor Adventure book, 448 Great Things to Do in Nature Before You Grow Up. You'll find a link to more about tomorrow's Great American Backyard Campout from WUWM.com/Lake Effect. Some other ideas for a weekend adventure when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.